Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to After the Checkered Flag, our F1 special series here on the Behind the Glass podcast. I am your co-host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass. Alongside me, your other co-host, Paul Wallace from Supercars of London.
Hello, it sounded like you were doing an orchestra. Well, it didn't sound, it looked like you were doing an orchestra. For those that are listening, Sam's arms were all over the place as if we have a bunch of musicians here. Oh, we did talk about getting the choir behind
you. You did want a choir to sing the F1
theme. Where are they, Sam?
I did say last week, that's all, last episode. That's not happening. Do you feel, this is a completely off the topic subject. Okay. Do you feel with time on YouTube you become more of a caricature of yourself?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, just, you spoke about the hands. I've noticed a lot, and I actually think some of the audience have. My hand movements are getting a little out of control these days. And when I try and rein it in, I then feel like I'm a robot.
Yeah.
So, Paul is
and
right.
And you also feel like you're so boring.
Yeah, if you're just standing still. Yeah. So, I started that episode again. If you're just listening and watching, not watching on the Behind the Glass YouTube channel, I said, my arms were flung open.
Were they like a muted version of what you really wanted to do?
Yeah, probably.
Basically, a full-on dance.
Absolutely. Anyway, sorry, as I say, I got distracted. We are here, of course, to discuss the Australian Grand Prix, the 2022 F1 Grand Prix in Melbourne. And boy, it was good to be back in Australia.
It was very good to be back. It wasn't very good to be up at 5:55 a.m. because that's what time I woke up.
We're now going to have a lot of American viewers slamming us, being like, oh, come on, guys, you can't complain about the one Grand Prix you have to wake up at 5:55
But that's the problem. It's only one.
Like,
if there was a few of them in a row, you would get used to waking up at that time and your body clock would shift. But because there's only one, you can't get up and you're really tired. I actually dozed off halfway through the F1. I'll admit it straight away. We're going to be moving on and not having these early starts.
Well, back in the day, though, firstly, Australia for a long time was the first Grand Prix of the season. So for me, it's got this kind of weird, you know, seeing the cars on track there is like a sort of very exciting, this is the start of the year. But also it did mark the start of these real early races. We had Sepang in Malaysia and my mind's gone completely
China.
China. Yeah, China used to be at the start of the year as well, didn't it? So we used to have these sort of back-to-back really early starts, which we haven't had now for a few years. But yeah, as I say, I'm sure a lot of our American listeners are going,
you know nothing. The Middle Eastern ones are the best.
Well, you say this. Another reason I was excited for this last race, it's the first time we've seen the cars in daylight.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Middle Eastern races you like because of the time that they take place.
Actually, but, and the American ones.
The American ones are starting to become a bit of a joke, if I'm honest. You know, I think, is it Brazil that starts like 7 or 8 p.m? Yeah, I'm like, perfect. I'm ready for bed. But I'm a little fed up of night races.
Oh, really?
I gotta be honest. I'm a bit like, come
two
on,
in.
God. Well, I just think things looked better in the daylight. I was like, I get to see the cars properly. And it's like Formula One is moving towards these night races. Everything, Vegas obviously got announced. Now that's going to be a night race.
There was definitely a little bit of magic in Abu Dhabi, waiting until that race, starting at dusk, and then entering into the night to sort of finish, and then the fireworks going off. So I do get it a little bit, especially if you're used to seeing Australia being race number one.
I like the dusk to night. It's just the pure night race. I don't know. Anyway, so maybe that's not the most important thing to discuss about the Australian Grand Prix, but I liked seeing the cars racing in the daylight. Now, it's going to be a funny thing to say, but there is potential that this was the least thrilling, I'm going to say least thrilling race of 2022, which is kind of mad because so much happened and there's so much to discuss and I actually really enjoyed it. But because we didn't have that fight between Verstappen and Leclerc, or at least a fight right at the top of the field, it just felt like maybe it wasn't as nuts as the first two races have been.
But that is because what we experienced in 2021 and at the start of 2022 is it was up here. The action was up here.
For the lead of the race.
And everything was to play for. And then going into this season, obviously, it felt more like an even playing field, and we didn't know where the drivers and cars were going to perform. So I think now that we've found our feet, and like you said to me at the beginning of the race weekend, Australia can sometimes be a bit of an anomaly.
Yes, God, that's hard to say.
At this time in the morning, anomaly. Yes.
Yes, it's very early on Monday.
We're still on Australian time. Yeah.
Bit of jet lag from watching the F1 at the weekend. No, and it is, you know, and I think McLaren were very keen to point that out, or at least Lando Norris was very keen to point yeah. that out. You know, historically, it has always proved to provide some slightly wacky results.
But is that because it's the first race of the season and they're probably trying to find their feet as well?
I think historically, yes, you're yeah. so right. But also, it is a street circuit with a quite weird layout. Obviously, the layout changed quite a lot for this year. But, you know, just the way that cars perform around that circuit doesn't necessarily, you know, lead to them performing the same in other circuits. You know, Lando, I watched a lot of his post-race interviews, said, look, the car hasn't changed. The car hasn't changed. We haven't
That's
done
so
anything.
Weird, then.
We haven't done anything amazingly with the setup. This track just suits our car. And we did see a lot of promise from McLaren in pre-season testing, and then it all went wrong at Barcelona. It suggests to me that if we sit here and go, Ferrari are going to walk away with this championship, we are idiots.
Yeah.
Because I think the rate of development...
I'd never say that.
Yeah,
okay.
I would.
You might.
I would. The rate of development, the way these cars are going to change and evolve, track-specific, track-dependent, I basically don't think the teams have a full understanding of these cars yet. And that was kind of proven with McLaren, where I don't think they expected that pace to turn up. Mm. They didn't really understand why it did, and I think they're a bit nervous going to Imola of what it's something going to look like for them. But yeah, I think we've got a long old season ahead of us, as we know.
How confusing for new F1 viewers to come into like the first three races of the season and be like, I'm struggling to get my head around this.
I'm like, what about Haas? Where did Haas go?
Yeah.
So it was a real topsy-turvy kind of race for a lot of the
incredibly
grid.
Confusing.
But we did fundamentally see that it's Ferrari and Red Bull at the top.
Wow.
And on...
Whoa.
What?
I mean, throughout the entire race, like race pace as they were, everyone was saying that the Merc was better as a race car than the Red Bull.
So I was going to come into this. So I was going to say, and then third on race pace, Mercedes.
Right,
I mean,
okay,
on qualifying, it's still a bit all over the place, but on race pace, you're right. A lot of the times, Mercedes were looking like they could battle with Red Bull. I think the Hamilton-Perez fight looked like it was going to go on for the full race.
So safety car run.
Safety cars, which seemed to just absolutely... like Hamilton's cursed by safety cars at the moment, which he said as much as well. But yeah, that looked like it was going on the whole race. And okay, Verstappen was a little bit clear of that for sure, but lap time-wise, they were kind of all there and thereabouts. So super interesting. But again, I think as we move forward, Mercedes might not be able to keep that kind of pace unless they start developing the car.
Well, they have to develop at a faster rate than Ferrari and Red Bull. And if Ferrari and Red Bull maintain this battle throughout the season, how fast are they going to be trying to develop? How are Mercedes then going to try and overtake that? I don't know.
It's a very good point. But I think before we get into all of that,
where are we starting?
The biggest takeaway of this whole weekend is
Ted Kravitz doing a shoey.
No, that was a good moment. If you missed that, by the way, I think
like
it was on.
I wanted to get involved.
Just go shoey.
Yeah, like 5:55 a.m. I was looking in the fridge for a beer to just do a beer out of my slipper.
That says more about you than it does about the Ted Kravitz moment. But yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me was: is this Red Bull so fragile, or going to turn out to be so fragile at these early stages of the season, that they're not going to be able to mount the proper challenge that they want to, the proper championship challenge?
At this point in the season, with the new regulations, all you want to be doing is consistently collecting points. It's the only way you're going to win this year's world championship, because the teams don't really know where their cars slot in. The drivers are finding their feet as much as the teams and the engineers are trying to find their feet, whether it's aerodynamics, powertrain, whatever it is that they're fiddling around with. And we saw in practice, Lewis was coming into the press paddock and basically saying, we're trying everything and nothing seems to be working. Whatever it is that we change, whether it's front end, nothing changes. So at this point, all you want to be doing is finishing.
Yep.
And collecting
totally
points.
And actually, if you go back to the Brawn year, for example, so 2009, you know, fundamentally, Button won that championship by dominating the first 6 to 8 races of the year. Because then Brawn ran out of money and development opportunities and Red Bull came on strong. And it was just a sort of could Vettel catch Button in time? And no, he couldn't. So, you know, if Leclerc can continue to just bash in these results, it's going to get to a point
and
where...
And Georgie.
Hold on. Don't get ahead of yourself. Don't let my blood boil too soon.
Early on a Monday morning. I'm just already pushing buttons.
Already winding me up. It's going to get to a point where it is going to be impossible for Verstappen or for anyone to catch Leclerc. We've seen it over the years. There have been incredibly fast cars which turn out to be very fragile. And it's not the first time with Red Bull. I think, when was Ricciardo's last year? 2018, I think? When they had horrendous reliability. And that famous scene of him in at Texas when he was in that kind of cowboy get-up suit and being furious. And it was his last few races with the team. So, 2018, surely. That's the big question, because two DNFs in three races is kind of unheard of for modern era Formula One. And what I found was weird is Red Bull came out like, it's not the same problem as Bahrain. Don't worry. I was like, that's not a good thing. Because at least if it was the same problem, reassuring. You knew what to fix. Like if it was the same problem reoccurring, you'd be like, right, we've got to get on top of this one problem. Mm. But if it was something completely different, that's not a good thing. And they were like, don't worry, guys. It's not the same problem.
It's just unpredictable. From Red Bull, like I was saying, how Max Verstappen drove the race in Saudi. He was unpredictable. He's throwing questions at Leclerc. I think this is still part of his gameplay. Yeah. Just retiring every now and again, not letting you...
I'm not so with you.
Maybe this strategy is not quite going
according to plan. It's not a great idea. You're hoping that Ferrari becomes so relaxed.
They just become Red Bull so confused they don't know whether Red Bull are going to finish the race or not.
Then they whip out the double diffuser and win everything. It's surprising. I mean, if you look at testing, I think it was Perez's car did have quite a lot of unreliability, a few issues here and there. Fundamentally, the Red Bull looks quick. You'd have to say during the race, nowhere near as quick as Leclerc and the Ferrari. Right. You know, apart from that one moment with the safety car restart where Leclerc admittedly got it a little bit wrong, he was completely in control. Yeah. 10, 15 seconds ahead at any one moment. So it was a second place that Verstappen gave away, not probably a race victory, but... You need those. We've seen that over the years. Yeah. But he even needs an eighth place. He needs places. I mean, I can't remember what the gap is now. 71 points to 28, is it? So my math isn't good enough, but that's a lot.
Sounds around 50.
It's something around that. Yeah. It's like 46 points. It's a ton of points that he's now trying to make up, almost two race victories. And look, as we keep saying, long season ahead. Mm. There will be races Leclerc doesn't finish. We've spoken about it before.
I think there'll be dominant shifts in dominance as well. I think they'll be coming into a particular section of the calendar and be like, yeah, we could probably come away with three, maybe four wins in a row.
Exactly, and that does claw it back. And we saw it with Hamilton against Verstappen last year. There were times when we were like, he's never getting back from here. There's only five races left and he's X amount of points behind. So it's all doable, but it's, I think... concerning about Red Bull's season. It's not like, could they do it? Yes, they can do it. We're only three races in. But what does this mean? Is it going to be an inherently unreliable car, which, as I say, we've seen from the likes of McLaren and Ferrari and all these different teams throughout the years, building very quick cars that, unfortunately, can't finish the race.
Well, they're going to go into the next race weekend and wonder whether they're going to finish the race rather than, are we going to win it?
Very good point. And speaking of next race weekend... do we think Charles Leclerc is going to be able to pull it off in Italy? I know, of course, his first race victory was in Monza. I don't want to doubt the man, because I've been telling you all year long, give him a race-winning car, he'll win races.
He has.
Not to sound like Will Buxton, but the man is proving all the hype and belief I had in him from his early, GP2 and Sauber days. But...
We've mentioned
the pressure thing.
Yeah. I don't know whether he feels the pressure more in Monaco than he does in Italy. I feel like the Monaco Grand Prix holds more pressure on his shoulders than the Italian Grand Prix does.
I think previously, I think he suffers when he's trying to prove a point. Mm-hmm. If you look at all the times where he has made uncharacteristic mistakes or mistakes, it's when he's really trying to outdrive himself. When he just turns up and bosses it, the man's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But when he's like, I got to get pole in Monaco, or I've got to start from the back and make my way through, or I'm in Azerbaijan and I'm a bit behind, like that's when he kind of overdrives the car. So I hope in Imola he's just going to turn up and be like, yeah, sick, I got the fastest car. And he's not going to go, I have to win this weekend. Otherwise, I've let the whole of Italy down. Because there's still a part of me that is like... watching Leclerc.
Well, let's hope he's not listening right now, because what you have just done there is put even more pressure on what is already a very high-pressured race weekend.
Just jinx him entirely. But no, I mean, the man is continuing to say absolute deliver, incredible performance, fantastic pole position, which apparently, according to Alonso, he could have had instead. Let's come back to that in 2 seconds.
But it's the same with every racing driver. We've talked about it so much on the podcast. It's like, oh, if I was a little bit quicker on the last corner, then I probably would have got pole too.
Yeah, if I didn't have a failure, I'd be on pole. Okay, Alonso.
If I was in the Ferrari, I would have got on pole.
And for all the Alonso fans who are now going to come out and say, but he was 2/10 up in the middle sector. He still had another sector to go. We do not know what would have happened.
Pole is not decided on the middle sector.
Yeah, literally. So anyway. But yeah, the
it was a grand slam for Leclerc.
It was grand slam, super impressive in a clearly dominant car, and in a race when his teammate kind of fell apart. Now, I didn't see this coming, because we've said multiple times on this podcast, if anyone's the cool, calm, collected head who's just going to get points and churn his way through the season, it was Carlos Sainz. Mm. But what do you think happened to him? I mean, it was unfortunate, but...
I think he may have had a little bit of the Leclerc syndrome, is what I'm going to call it, is when he really felt like he was driver number two this weekend. Yep. I don't feel like he was up there. He never felt like he was as fast or as confident as Leclerc. And then I do think those tyres just never switched on in the race and at the beginning of the race. But then we saw, was it Kevin Magnussen that went off and managed to save the same corner? So maybe he was overdriving.
Yeah, I don't want to be overly harsh. I do love science, but... Obviously, going back to qualifying, he got screwed over by the red flag. Mm. But then, so he had the pressure, didn't he, to deliver a lap out of nowhere. And I think he made a bit of a mistake and slammed it. Anyway, so he was unfortunate there and ended up definitely way further back than he should have been. He was front row, or at least front two rows material. As you say, has a sort of slightly awful start, no heat in the tyres. But then I just think a bit of a desperado move going into, I've forgotten all the turn numbers now, they've changed the track layout, but one of the fastest parts of the track, not an easy place to make an overtake. No. And just like sends it in there at way too much speed. And then just sort of out of control and like, you're not going to save it. And we did see Magnussen, as you say, at least he slowed the car down a bit more, but still get across the grass and survive. Mm. Where Sainz was like, whoa!
Yeah, which again, at this point, as we said, is just about points collecting.
Yes, and it was
an unforced error.
When Ferrari are as dominant as they are at this point in the season, because we don't know what's going to happen the rest of the year, unfortunate for Sainz, and won't help him in, you know...
Puts him fully on the back foot, mentally, and also on a table order.
And within the team.
And within the team, exactly. I was just... When you were doing a little bit of your talking there, I was thinking, last season... Sainz would have seen himself as an equal to Leclerc. And now, three races in, he's not there. He's already slotting into a number two position to help Charles out.
Well, that's the whole thing, is the team... Charles is the golden boy of Ferrari, has been
and
for
mentally,
a while.
You just don't want that.
And that's the whole thing, is you need to... You know, and Carlos did great in Saudi. I think it kind of, getting his elbows out, and it looked like he was having a bit of an advantage. And going into the weekend, I think, again, he was super quick on Friday. And even in, Q1 and Q2 and stuff... but then suddenly it all shifts because Leclerc puts in this dominant performance. You have a bit of a mess and the team are like, well, we can't count on old Charlie. Yeah. So yeah,
it will have an impact.
It will definitely have an impact. And it wasn't a great race for Sainz and for Verstappen in terms of future championship. But long way to go. So let me ask, who were your standout drivers from Australia? What? Apart from the fact you had a little sleep.
Who can I remember?
there were some good performances, but I feel like during your nap, you may have missed some of them.
I highly enjoyed watching. This is as a collective.
Sure.
Because we have talked about this away from the microphones, is whilst we've got Red Bull and Ferrari battling it out, we do want teams to join that fight. And we want to see four teams. And what I felt like on race pace throughout the duration is, yes, McLaren and Merck weren't quite there, but to see them closer to the Red Bull and the Ferrari, Leclerc obviously drove the wheels off that car, and he got out of the car and said, The car was unbelievable. Like, this wasn't possible without the car. So he had high praise for the car, which shows that Ferrari have done a really good job. This might sound a little bit obvious, but Albon, I loved him when he came into the Red Bull car. I thought he was highly enjoyable. Gutted when he lost his seat and sort of dropped out of Formula One. So to not only see him back in F1, then do what, 56 laps or whatever it was on one set of tyres. I was talking to you during a Saudi Grand Prix and saying like, oh, can... Because I think Lewis at one point maybe could have got to the end on that one set of tyres. And you said, no, they've got to come into the pits. And I was trying to think, he's got to come into the pits. And then what's that going to do? Is that going to throw away his potential points? So great to see him at P10. I don't know whether that ruins any of the order that what we're going to be talking about. Loved seeing Albon up there. But I also loved seeing, as the checkered flag dropped, by the way, I didn't fall asleep for that long. But
okay, sure. Short nap.
Yeah, when Lewis came round and be like, great. I mean, he's up there. Russell's up there. And then seeing Lando come through. I wondered whether we were going to see a swap on the final corner to see Lando let Ricciardo past.
Really? Yeah. What, is it like a hometown hero?
Yeah.
Because it did look a bit odd because we didn't get the message that Lando had some apparent problem, apparently. It looked like Ricciardo was really closing in. I was like, oh my God, Ricciardo's going for a lap, on the last lap. And it would have been nice, but I think they are way too competitive with each other and within that team to have done anything like that.
The other one. Big flag flyer of Mick Schumacher. He finished above K-Mac, didn't he?
I'm not sure he did in the end.
Well, he was above him for a long period.
Oh, he did. Well done. He did. 13.
My guy.
He wasn't your guy.
Until about 5 minutes ago. Okay, well, let's come back to old Mick. I got to agree with you on Albon.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this reminds us of how highly we need to rate him. Because we did as he went into that Red Bull seat, and then it all fell apart like it did for so many drivers when they joined Red Bull. But he's done what Russell did for 3 years or however long he was at Williams, and everyone went, oh my God, he's the next coming of Jesus Christ, and maybe we're seeing that now, first podium for Russell with Mercedes. It was a fantastic performance because not only did he make those tyres last, but he was quick. Mm. He was quick and he did what he needed to do, and to get P10 I think was fantastic for Williams, fantastic for him. And as Latifi falls apart, continues to fall apart.
I think it's already fallen apart.
Oh my God. Albon is just doing everything that he needs to do to remind people that actually, guys, hold on a second, I am good. I am a disaster at Red Bull. So, yeah, super happy for him. Norris, I agree, like, good for McLaren, you know. Yeah, and they ran whatever it was, you know, back to back or next to each other or in tandem for the whole race, wasn't it? Norris and Ricciardo. So they were fairly evenly matched. It looked like Norris just had the upper hand, a bit like with Russell and Hamilton at the end. Like, he had an answer for Ricciardo as he needed to. But I got the feeling if they were the other way around at any point, Ricciardo would have kept Norris behind as well. So they were just very evenly matched. I hope Lando's wrong. And that's a sign of McLaren getting on, just, you know, getting somehow figuring out that car. Yeah, it turned good. Because you're right, it was nice to see them on there, wasn't it? So you mentioned Mick Schumacher. It was a weird one because, yeah, Haas's pace has disappeared, especially K-Mag's pace. I actually remember, weirdly, feel like I sort of saw Mick having a bit of a messy race. He obviously had that terrifying moment really colliding into Tsunoda on the start finish line with a safety car restart. That was scary as hell. But I feel like it was a messy race. Maybe it wasn't. But yeah, both out of the points, unfortunately, for them and not looking as competitive as they had done.
Was it the last time that we were at Australia when Haas had that double retirement when they both came into the pits?
I think maybe
that's right. So absolutely, literally all fell apart.
Better than the last time.
Yeah. But maybe Australia's just cursed for them. Who knows?
So can we then quickly touch on Alonso? Because we did a little bit.
Okay.
So going into the race, you know, Alpine looked competitive and fast. During practice, he was quick. And then, yeah, going into quali, I mean, he's there setting purple sectors in Q3. Looks like he's genuinely going to, like,
a lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Trouble for the front row, hydraulics failure or whatever it was, sends him off into the gravel and into the barrier. He then had a fairly uneventful, unexciting race. He finished down officially P17, but like...
What?
Yeah, didn't move forward, like didn't do anything. Like, and this is a guy who could have been on the front row, came out after being like, we were quicker than the Mercedes all weekend. And I'm like, were you, mate? Because they're third and fourth and you're 17. So that confused me a bit, Alonso. People, let us know in the comments, did he have some secret issue that we missed? Was there some performance deficit? Because I've long had the suspicion, haven't I? Oh, people. They've been working towards this future.
And I went to the factory, I picked up all of these rumours.
And I thought, with Alonso about to get pole, I was like, it's coming true! And then he was nowhere in the race.
But I do kind of feel like Alpine have that capability of either finishing in the top five and being like, wow, where did they come from?
Yeah.
Or just completely disappearing, it's because I actually forgot that they were even running.
Yeah,
there was one point where I think Ocon nearly had a crash, and they was like, oh yeah, they're still in it. But they weren't in the pink cars this weekend, were they?
No, so flip livery, which was a bit confusing. Yeah. I was like, oh, who's that fella? And when they were racing with Williams, I was like, what's going on? Yeah. My brain, I was like, it's too early.
What have they done?
Yeah, this is so strange. Something's going on. Okay, so we've got to touch on then.
Georgie Russell. Oh, I thought we were going to go into Sebastian.
No,
we're saving him to the end.
Yes, we are. So yeah, Georgie Russell. So, solid performance from Merck on race pace. George, fortunate with the safety car, was probably a net P4 in that race, or P5 if Verstappen hadn't retired. Hamilton, as I say, looked more competitive against Perez at least. But once Russell was in that position, he did incredibly well. And actually, I think his racing with Perez, he held Perez behind far longer than Hamilton did. Mm. So his confidence in the car to do battle, I think, was great. I mean, I think it was a really... It was a solid weekend from Russell.
100%.
And more proof of Merck making the right choice and him delivering what he needs to, and he's going to push Hamilton and the team forward because he's there. I mean, they again running in tandem. Is that the right thing to say?
I don't know. There was at one point in the race where it was, other than the Ferrari, and then it was the two Red Bulls, the two Mercedes, the two McLaren, then there was like the two Alpine. Then there was a split between the Alfa Romeo and
Alfa Tauri or something like that, but it was very...
It was almost as though, exactly, yeah. The teams were just driving around together.
But that's good to see, I think, for us as semi-Mercedes fans. I'm a Hamilton fan, not really a Mercedes fan.
Well, but in terms of, if you look at the collective result from a team perspective, Mercedes won that weekend. They collected... Yeah, from a points perspective.
Fair. Well, yeah, P2 in the championship, yeah. So is Russell. I mean, if you think about it, we sit here slating Mercedes. What's happened to them? Their pace has gone out of the window. It's a disaster. But actually, they are nailing it. Through a bit of luck.
Mm.
But they are there scooping up all the points they can so that as and when, or if maybe, they can turn that car around. They're right there. Compared to Verstappen, who Christian Horner was like, oh, I'm not fast, like whatever.
Yeah.
Actually, mate, hold on a sec, because you should be winning races. Yeah. And you're not, like, you are 45 odd points off the championship lead. Like, that's a long way to claw back. Where, okay, fine, Hamilton is equally the same, because I think he's only 1 point ahead of Verstappen, but Russell's right up there. And as a team, they're only 30 odd points, I think, off Ferrari, which is nuts.
Going off the back of this weekend, they are going to be going into Imola and the next few races with far greater confidence than Sainz.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then collectively the Ferrari team and also Red Bull, because Red Bull don't know whether they're going to be able to finish the race. They're obviously thinking, yeah, we'll be competitive, we'll be fighting for Ferrari, but then when you get 75-80% into the race, what's going to happen to that car? So there's a lot of questions that will be asked between Sainz, Red Bull, Ferrari, and at the moment, whilst all Merck really have to do is just sort that car out.
Well, yeah, I mean, so yeah, like 25 seconds
well,
off
the lead. They've got to do it to Lugara.
I mean, yeah, so I say, 25 seconds off the lead with a couple of safety cars, you know, they're struggling. Like, yeah. We can't get away from that. And on quali pace, it's tough. I mean, I know they were fifth and sixth, weren't they? Which is kind of where they should be, if you think about it. They're theoretically third fastest team, but even that was a
practice.
Well, that's the thing, it's, you kind of question it. You don't really know where they're going to end up. But race pace, they do look like the third fastest. But yeah, it's such a hard one to say. And you could easily see if a Leclerc and Verstappen came together in a race, and then you had an unreliable Sainz and Perez, you can see where a Mercedes victory is going to come from this year. It's not going to come from pace. So, but if they can keep doing what they're doing now for the first five or six races of the year, they are going to be in a fantastic position if they can get that car.
What wins world championships? Like me and Tony talk about it a lot, it's the consistency.
Yeah.
To be able to operate at that level and just be in the right place. A lot of people will call it luck. It's absolutely not luck that Russell, Lewis or Bottas were right there to collect the points. If they weren't having the best weekend, their car wasn't the fastest, they were there to collect the points. And if, like you say, Leclerc and Verstappen come together, or Perez and Leclerc, or whoever comes together, if they're just there, that was kind of a strategy that I took into the race weekend that I just had.
That will be talked about in a future episode.
Yeah, I think we probably should.
We should. It'll be good. Credibility to this podcast. Okay, well, look, let's come on to, I guess, our main topic for the day, which falls into Conspiracy Corner.
Drop the theme song.
Conspiracies. I think that theme song is very different to the one that featured in the last episode.
Okay.
Because I haven't figured out yet. Yeah.
We're just trying around with a little bit of production. We're working on some auto-tune for Sam as well.
So, mentioned his name already. Seb Vettel. Here is my leading question for us to discuss throughout this episode. Will Seb Vettel finish the season?
You think he will go before the end of the season?
Yes, I do.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, he raised a few eyebrows when he started to pick rubbish up at the end of the race weekend. Kind of felt like his mind, his heart wasn't in the racing as such. I think he is quickly falling out of love with the sport, which I think came from the way that he was fundamentally booted out of Ferrari, because that was his life goal, his life ambition. He ticked that box and everything's kind of gone downhill from then. His crash this weekend is literally like what I would do on the end. It's like you hit the curb and then you're like, that's so annoying.
Restart. No, you're so right. And it really goes back, I think, even further than that. You know, so you've hit the nail on the head, I think. That final year at Ferrari, stuff started to go a bit wrong. And he looked like a different Seb, you know, in interviews and things like that, the way people were questioning him. He wasn't the same guy, and there was something off. He goes to Aston Martin. We've all got our hopes and prayers that this is going to be a new lease of life for Seb. He has some good results early on, but the car's uncompetitive. And as the year goes on, the car becomes less competitive, and he looks a little unenthused by it.
Do you reckon that was after he was forced to shoot the DBX at that?
That we all saw a million times if you watched Sky UK. But yeah, and as you say, he then started to become more proactive in sort of things away from the track or around the track, you know, the litter pitting, the sort of human rights advocating, or the human rights support, you know, all these things that were fantastic to see as him as a human, as someone in the sport who's a voice and has got that power, but yeah, wasn't really focused on the racing. Then we see him turn up to pre-season testing looking homeless. He still looks homeless today. Like, his hair and his beard, like, he literally looks like he's just like come out of a cabin for 4 months.
He's fully going. I don't know what the right word is. He's very, very quickly, because I've listened to the podcast that he did, is it called Beyond the Grid?
Yeah,
the F1. And he's like, I live on a farm.
Yeah.
Like,
no social media.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
just
yeah,
you know,
yeah. He's
happy in my life with my family.
He will fully go off grid the moment.
Oh, we'll never see him again.
Yeah.
Well, we might see him around the paddock, but
I just don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you're right. Because then we see a bit of testing. Aston Martin are a bit off. He gets COVID. If I was Seb Vettel at home and I saw the first two races and I saw Aston Martin, I'd be going.
Yeah. Just Keep Hulkenberg.
Literally. I'm like, I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And then he turns up. He has a disastrous weekend, basically, in general. The car looks hard for him to drive. He makes mistakes. Him and Stroll in the wall, left, right, and centre. Just like everything falls apart. And in interviews, and just in his general body language, and even Paul de Resta picked up on it. And you know, he said, look, I know Seb well. I've raced against him for years. That's not the Seb you want to see. He looks distant. And if I was Vettel, and I had these sort of other passions now and these other things, and I was in a super uncompetitive car, which doesn't look to be for me. I was like, actually, you know what, guys? I've done myself. Because he's got nothing to prove.
I actually think about this quite a lot, whether I'm watching football, tennis, whatever it is. Like, we're coming to the end of an era in quite a lot of sports in terms of the greatest of all time in existence. You're looking at the Messi and the Ronaldo era. You're looking at Federer, Nadal, all of these players that have been so dominant in their sport, and Lewis Hamilton to an extent. You kind of have to bow out with dignity, credibility, and holding your
try head high.
Yeah, exactly. And apologies for the football reference, but Arsene Wenger was a prime example of someone really should have retired 3 seasons prior to what he did, because he was then remembered for the decline of the Arsenal Football Club rather than the heroics that he had during his heyday. And Vettel's another example of someone who's won multiple world championships, been so dominant in the sport, had some of the greatest on-track battles and championship battles with Lewis and other racing drivers.
I can't remember.
Probably Schumacher. And there becomes a point where you have to switch off your competitiveness, because these guys have got the highest strung level of competitiveness built into their DNA. It's the reason why they operate at the level that they operate at, and the reason why they go into every race weekend. So to be able to turn that off is one of the hardest, because really, like, they live to compete and they live to try, and Vettel will be there because he wants to win. That's as simple as that.
But if you, so, you know, we've seen it multiple times with champions in Formula One before. Mika Häkkinen, not so much. He did have that dodgy year that he took his, you know, not retirement, what do we call it?
Sabbatical,
thank you. But, you know, Jacques Villeneuve, Damon Hill, other great drivers, David Coulthard, even Button, if you think about it. Like, staying in the sport in an uncompetitive car for what, from the outside, feels like a bit too long. And you think, oh, God, what a disappointing way to end your career, this sort of racing for 17th place, like in an uncompetitive car. But you're so right. For them, they are just constantly chasing that competitive hit, that vibe.
I think they're all terrified of retirement and losing a purpose.
Very good point as well. Absolutely fantastic point. But I think at the same time, if you look at all those individuals, and if you listen to Beyond the Grid, any other kind of interview with an ex-Formula One driver, there definitely gets to a point where they all start to sort of say, you know, I just realised that I wasn't enjoying it as much. I didn't have that drive, I didn't have that hunger. Even Kimi. Like, we laugh and joke about Kimi, but, you know, he had some great years after his championship. But those final two seasons with Sauber, you could kind of tell he was ready to go. And I think from the body language and the messaging and everything about Vettel this year, even prior to the start of the season, I was like, I don't see this guy hanging around. And Aston Martin just... we hate to see it. That team is really in trouble. You know, Force India, Racing Point, whatever. Always the underdogs. Always punching above their weight. And I'm sorry, they're going through a big technical restructuring. So in 5 years' time, maybe they'll come good. But it is a horror show right now. And if I was Vettel, I'd be like, what's the point?
Exactly.
What is the point? I take a year out, go and do Le Mans. You can always come back. Look at Alonso.
Yeah.
You know, you are a four-time world champion. There is always going to be a team who is tempted to sign you.
There's always an opportunity to pick up a seat.
Exactly that, where instead it's going to dwindle down, unhappy, and crash it.
Yeah. I actually have another conspiracy.
Conspiracy corner.
Next time, bring your guitar.
Oh, I did have one.
It's a conspiracy. So, it's not necessarily a conspiracy as such, but I was having a conversation with someone else who is quite interested in motorsport, shall we say. And he claimed that Lewis might get to the point where Vettel's at this
okay.
season.
Okay.
Because he owes, has only got one more season on his contract, Lewis.
I don't know.
I think he can, I think he's probably got the mental capacity to just go, screw it, I'm gonna retire. So what if Mercedes don't compete and bring the development up to Ferrari and Red Bull, right? And Lewis is just batting around in fifth, sixth, dropping down into 11th, and not getting the hook, the buzz that he needs from the sport. He uses Abu Dhabi as an excuse to be like, it took me, I used so much of my energy, physically and mentally, to bring myself to race one of 2022, considering what happened in 2021. How much it took me to get to the grid for this race season, giving it a go, it's not worth it. So I'm finishing. Mercedes pull out.
Oh,
Mercedes
what?
Shift and go, it's not working out for us within our corporate direction. We're actually pulling out of Formula One now. And what happens to George Russell? He's worked his entire life to get the Mercedes seat. He gets one season in an uncompetitive car and then has to go and find another seat.
I mean, this is
it's
such
so
an
out there.
It's such a stretch.
But you can see it happening. I can fully see Lewis at the end of this season going, I used up all of my energy to get here, and it's not what it's not.
So that we're going to discuss. Mercedes pulling out, I'm going to leave for you and your tinfoil hat to analyse and discuss. You can find some people on
what's
Twitter.
The point of Mercedes if there's two British drivers?
Wait, let's just...
Because there's another...
Slow down here. Let's slow down here, because I know you spent your week looking at conspiracies online, and I do not want this podcast to become just completely ridiculous. So Lewis is a very interesting one. I think it's worth discussing. Off the back of Saudi, you could look at it and go, is this kind of like what's Lewis Hamilton doing? He's sitting around like, it's super unfortunate. And actually, off the mic, we discussed this with Max Chilton when we turned into our podcast with him last week. You know, I think if Hamilton had won the 8th championship last year, I think he would have
retired.
I just get the feeling he would have been like, cool, I've done it.
Yeah.
And in the same way that Rosberg did at the end of his championship year, he'd put so much of his heart and soul and body into that fight with Verstappen. I think he was like, cool,
yeah,
I'm done. New era, new generation for Formula One, off you go.
And try and beat my record.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what he's going for.
As a legacy type thing.
Whether he's going to come out and say it, 7 world championships is not enough for Lewis.
However, he doesn't win the championship. Mm-hmm. Hamilton, rather than, I think his ego and his competitiveness wouldn't allow him to go, right, well, I'm so disgusted with the sport, I'm going to walk away. Because I think the thought of people calling him a sore loser, or, as you say, the fact that he didn't achieve what he wanted to, I think he was like, nah, I've got to give another go, and I believe in my team. And that was the talk, you know, at the start of the year, after Bahrain, the team are going to figure this out, I'm good. Then he gets to Saudi, he's like, oh no, like, I'm not sure if the team are going to figure this out.
P10?
Yeah, literally. And at the start of the weekend, he looked very confused, and well, as you say, whatever we do to the car never improves, and I don't know what's going on. But I think, again, his ego, we've got to remember, like, as much as we support Hamilton, his ego is the 90% of who he is as a man. The thought of him bowing out just because he's in an uncompetitive car, it would slightly be hypocritical, but also allow every single hater to be like, oh, there you go. See, the minute he's not in the fastest car, he's bailing. And whilst it's been a long time, and comments that he makes like, do you even get points for 10th? They're a little bit disrespectful.
Yeah.
He's been through this. You know, there have been plenty of years where he's not been in a championship-winning car. And they're not, okay, they're not 17th and 18th. They're second in the championship. He's had a podium. Russell's now had a podium. They're there or thereabouts. And in 2012, in 2010, in 2009, he's been in cars that have performed as badly, in inverted commas, as this, or as, you know, in a sort of car that doesn't look like it's Ursa alive, 2012. 2011, when he kept crashing. Anyway, he's been in this situation before, so...
But
just
as a younger...
As a younger, hungrier driver, sure. But the other question is, if he bows out, and then next year Mercedes deliver a championship-winning car, what's he... So, I can't see it. I can see him getting more and more frustrated, more and more depleted, and is he sitting there going, guys, let's just... Let's give up hope. We're not going to win the championship. Put everything into next year. Then I'll win my 8th and go. But this is Formula One. There's no guarantee ever. You can't guarantee it. You know, bless Tony, as the hardcore Hamilton fan he is, and he can't believe that Hamilton won't figure it out and win the championship. I've been trying to say carefully to him so he doesn't get too upset. there is a chance that Mercedes just won't win this championship. It does happen. Like, we do see it. Red Bull, after their years of dominance with Vettel, got it wrong. Ferrari, with their years of dominance with Schumacher, got it wrong. Prior to that, McLaren, with their years of dominance with Prost and Senna, started to get it wrong. Williams, oh my God, 98 with Williams, yeah, going from a 3 or 4 years of complete dominance. So it happens, it changes, and there's no guarantee Mercedes will get it back. But as Hamilton, I don't think at the first hint of uncompetitiveness,
he'll jump ship.
I think he'll 100% go to the end of the year. I would assume he'll do next year as well, but then might bow out. I think if it's 2 years of uncompetitiveness, then he might say, I definitely don't think he wants to go dwindling, but that's what Vettel didn't sit there going, oh yeah, I want to go in this race just for the sake of racing in a crap team. I think he genuinely thought Aston Martin could go somewhere. They've always been the underdog team. Yeah. They got huge money coming in. They're poaching all the right people. Heck, maybe I'm going to win races. Mm. Look at Bottas. He went to Alfa Romeo. Yeah. He's doing so well. Yeah. So I think that's what Vettel was hoping for. It's just falling apart for him.
Yeah.
So, lots of questions, lots of things to wait and see about the season. That's what makes the season so exciting. I think there's just so much that's going to change and going to happen, and we're just going to have to hold our breath. But the fundamental truth is, at the moment, Charlotte Claire
is all to play for.
No, it's not. Charlotte Claire is smashing life. And he's just being the boy I always wanted to be.
He's definitely doing what Carlos Sainz did when he went to Ferrari, and I was looking at him a little bit. He's not a Ferrari driver. Leclerc has always been, in my eyes, a Ferrari driver. Like, I always believed he deserved that seat from what he did in F2, and it was kind of only a matter of time until he got there. But yeah, I just think because of those early Ferrari seasons and the races that he got shone and propelled into the limelight, Monaco just is so fresh in my mind every single time with everything that he does there. But now actually to see him kind of deliver what you've expected from him is cool to see. And as long as he continues to win, Max will start.
Just get Lewis up there. The problem is, we've discussed this once, I don't know how to Hamilton gets up there. It's Hamilton versus Leclerc for the championship.
What happens there?
Well, I am a Hamilton fan. I think I do want Hamilton. But it's that kind of thing where I don't really care. I'd be happy. But I just want to see the racing.
What if Mercedes remain uncompetitive? Carlos Sainz continues to decline.
Okay, you're going a bit crazy. You've read too many conspiracies.
I'm still on
anyway, time yeah. What we're going to have to discuss in a future episode is whether Monaco is going to continue to exist as a Formula One movie. Oh, that's a big talking topic, but we'll probably save that for later. Maybe even around Monaco.
Monaco special.
Exactly. When's our next race? Is it a couple of weeks now?
2 weeks. I guess not 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, it's 2 weeks, but I don't know if you're around.
26th. Is it? It's the
25th.
24th.
24th
is the
are
race.
25th, yes. You are around, okay. So yes, we'll be back with you then for a couple of
time. Really secretive.
It's kind of the start of the European season, but not really, because then we go to Miami. But anyway, our first European race of the year, which will be super exciting, around Imola, Ferrari's homeland, with a competitive car. Oh my God, I'm almost exploding with excitement. Tune in or stay subscribed if you want to check out that episode. Of course, Tony and I will be back with you later this week for the latest main.
What are you talking about?
It's a bit of car news. There's been a lot going on actually recently. I don't know, we just talk crap, man. I never really know what we're going to talk about, but there's a bit of car news that we're going to be discussing. So yes, subscribe here to this YouTube channel, turn on notifications, keep following us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you can listen to your podcasts. If you want to follow Paul, he's at WallacePJW or at SuperCarsLondon on most social media platforms, and at CNTGlance on most social media platforms. See you in a couple of weeks for more Art Chicken Flag.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.